My bet is that Twitch Versus team got pulled across to do DMCA stuff.
You don't need
that tournament hosting stuff. Help people delete VODs en masse. Make them enlisted. That's probably what's actually happened, to be fair.
Guarantee you that's probably what happened too.
Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. We are, I think, the final episode of 2020 now. And news this week has been a little bit slow, hasn't it, Ben? So I think what we've decided to do is sort of a recap of the streamer news over the last year, as I think that would be a little bit more interesting for people to listen to. And 2020 has been one of those years where it's kind of flown by, but at the same time, the amount of things that have happened this year, especially with live streaming due to all the COVID stuff, has been just insane.
Yeah, especially this year in particular, with just, it feels like some of the stuff we're going to talk about here in review feels like it happened years ago at this point because of how long 2020 has felt. So I'm excited to go through some of this and talk about some of the things that both news in terms of actual just platform news and people moving around, things like that, but also like things that came out this year and whether they kind of made an impact and made a difference or whether they kind of fell off after all the initial hype. So I think that'd be cool to review for both stream tech as well as platform updates and that sort of thing too. So
I think one interesting thing is for me it feels like 2020 was all DMCA, but when I was going through basically how I constructed this list of things that we should discuss this week, because I went through the Gaming Careers newsletter, which for those of you that aren't subscribed is an industry newsletter that we send out every week, similar subjects to what we discuss on the podcast, but quite a lot of people, you know, that don't watch YouTube every day but want to stay in touch with what's happening in the live streaming world, subscribe to this newsletter. It's very popular. And I went through the history of the whole year of newsletters that we've sent out and sort of noted down some of the bigger topics. And DMCA didn't really come up until, you know, a few months into the year. So it was interesting to think, because I thought it dominated the whole year, but there was actually some news pre-DMCA. I think one of the things that I'm particularly proud of this year was the video that I did on microphones, where I analyzed the top 250 streamers on Twitch, the partners, the people with the most viewers, and looked at what microphones they used. And I did this just for a video topic, but it kind of turned into a bit more of a study where we were really seeing, you know, were people just copying the microphones that the top streamers were using? And the big pullout stat from that video was that the Shure SM7B, funnily enough, the microphone that both of us are using in this podcast, was used by nearly 50% of the top 250 streamers on Twitch. Did you catch this video? Was there anything that you pulled out from it?
I did, yeah. In fact, I definitely referenced that video when I was choosing to get this mic earlier this year, because it was a really cool video. I like the way that you kind of broke down. Oh, I'm a big data nerd, so I love seeing the statistics and the pie charts and everything you did. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy because this microphone has definitely dominated Twitch. It's hard to find a stream that's not using this microphone at this point. And then we had, of course, the USB version come out later this year because this one's so popular. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. It's just got such a look to it. And I think, you know, like the Joe Rogan podcast and that kind of thing helped contribute to that. But yeah, that was a great video. And I'm sure this will continue to be one of the biggest mics of next year as well.
I think what was interesting from my point of view is it was quite a taxing video to make in terms of the amount of work that had to go into it. But what kind of followed on from that was well worth it from my point of view, because straight from that video, a YouTuber who covers a lot of microphones and covers a lot of the podcasting world called Podcastish reached out literally through the comments on that video, saying like it was a really interesting video and some comments about the SM7B. And I contacted him that day and we managed to schedule a podcast, which we then went into loads of depth about why the SM7B is so popular. Is it just people copying each other? Is there some, you know, science behind it? And, you know, this guy is called Bandrew Scott. He knows his stuff like completely back to front in terms of audio gear. You know, he's tested mics that are $10,000 plus, so he had a really interesting insight into the microphone world and especially the world of podcasting and Twitch and why this microphone is so popular. But like you said, one of the things that I mentioned in that video was that Shure hadn't really designed this microphone for streamers, and then what did we see? Like 9-10 months later, they released the MV7, which is effectively this microphone redesigned a little bit with the option of using USB as well. So it is interesting that they, you know, clearly took note of how many sales they were still getting of the SM7B, and where they were going was into the podcasting and streaming world. But then even other brands, Rode, have reached out to me from that video saying it was really interesting and, you know, sent me some of their microphones. So like I kind of want to keep that video style going with testing lights and testing webcams and those kind of things and seeing what the top streamers are using, because it was a video that did very well, but it was also like super useful for me in terms of reaching out to more brands.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It makes sense for brands to want to get in those really, I think the in-depth videos like that are so valuable, not just for viewers, but also for brands to get that exposure. I do think I agree with what you said about, sure, kind of finally recognizing the streamer market, because again, it's such a huge amount of people using this microphone now that I'm not surprised they finally did make a product for it. And it is a pretty hefty price tag for a new streamer to try and get one of these with a preamp and the actual mic and an arm and everything. So I think the USB version will probably continue to do well. I actually have not seen that used a lot in streams yet. Have you? Because that was, as we're looking through some of the hardware that came out this year, I haven't seen a whole lot of that one yet.
Yeah, I haven't obviously done the same level of study. I've seen it a little bit. And I've seen, obviously, Elgato also released the Wave microphones this year, both USB microphones. And I've seen them a few times as well. I'd honestly like to do that study every year and see how it changes, because especially as a lot of these top 250 streamers are probably going to be partnered with a brand that will start to make microphones. You know, a lot of top streamers are partnered with Elgato, whether they'll be asked to start using these microphones. And yeah, will we see the MV7, you know, become more popular than the SM7B? Or will the SM7B remain like the number one microphone just because people see it, they like the sound of it, and then they buy it themselves? It's really, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I think the big thing that it comes down to is probably like the interface, because we don't know really if TC Helicon are going to keep working on the Go XLR. I think it's unlikely. And that's the big advantage of the MV7 and the Elgato Wave microphones over the SM7B is that you don't need an interface. You can run it just purely through USB. But yeah, super interesting video that kind of kickstarted the year. And I wanted to touch on just because it was, you know, stats based, and I know you love your stats. But the next thing that we saw was kind of a precursor to the world that we live in now, where Travis Scott's virtual concert was watched by reportedly 12.3 million people. Not all live, some in VOD format, obviously probably over 50% in VOD format, but a huge virtual concert that was held in the game Fortnite, where Travis Scott performed live and people could watch through the game or through live streams.
Yeah, this is one of those things that feels like it was years ago at this point because of how long 2020 has been. But this was a crazy event, and it really kind of set the precedent for more events like this happening, even not just in Fortnite, I think, but in other types of games as well with live events. I think, so I don't play Fortnite at all. I used to like dabble in it, but it's been years since I really played Fortnite. But
you're speaking to the right person. I've never played a single game of Fortnite. I've never installed it. It's just never appealed to me.
That's right. We're snobby league players over here on this podcast. But I did watch this concert because it was just so interesting, and there's such a huge virality to these events that I've actually watched a lot of them, not just the Travis Scott one, but every time they do a new season, they have the big like reveal event for what's going to happen. And I always kind of watch those because it's so interesting to see this live game event for everyone who's in the game. And it's a new idea. I think Call of Duty did a similar thing with some zombie stuff. I don't know if you saw that as well, but I think we'll see more of this keep happening. And it's a cool way to kind of bring people together in a game that can't really do events the same way as like an MMO or something, where everyone's still a part of it. And it really even, it does break into streaming and YouTube a lot, because people want to see the reactions of the streamers during the event, and you can see multiple angles and everything. So I thought it was super cool. Did you watch these as well?
I managed to catch some of the highlights. I think it kind of ties in with, you know, a lot of Twitch's focus this year has been on music, and I'm avoiding talking about DMCA here, but in terms of the creators that they're trying to sign to the platform, Twitch, we've seen a lot of music artists, DJs, producers being signed to Twitch and started streaming on Twitch. And we've sort of, I think early in the year, actually, Twitch released an update where they started to show, they had set directories for music and for esports, and music was obviously going to be a big focus for them. And yeah, it was a precursor to COVID. Like, so many events have had to be virtual this year or watched online, and this one kind of kickstarted the year.
Yeah, and there's been a lot more, like you said, not just game events but music events too. I know there was the charity stream, I'm blanking on the name of it, but the big one Twitch did earlier this year with a bunch of music artists playing, those all did super well too. So I think it was cool to see them kick off the year with this, and I am grateful that even during COVID we had a lot of cool virtual events you could be part of on Twitch. And even though some of them probably haven't been done the best, like, I think conventions didn't maybe translate super well to the online experience, but actual performances and things like that did pretty well overall. And I think people probably discovered a lot in new music this way too. So it was pretty cool to review that.
Yeah, talking of things that sort of started to do quite well this year on Twitch, chess is the one that kind of stood out to me. You know, we're seeing streamers, both traditional streamers streaming learning chess, and also traditional chess grandmasters starting to turn to Twitch as a platform. And that's kind of been a really crazy growth on Twitch. It's become a very popular directory, and people wanting to watch, you know, people learning chess, or, you know, grandmasters playing chess and all the different variants of speed chess and all those kind of things. I think for me, it's really interesting. I've never really been a massive fan of chess. I played it, you know, when I was a young kid with my dad, but never more than that. But it's been something that I kind of followed now that it's become popular on Twitch. It's such an interesting game. And, you know, you have to put so much time into even get close to being considered average, really. It's so competitive. So yeah, that was something that really took me by surprise this year. I don't think I could have ever bet that that was going to be something that blew up on Twitch, such a traditional game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a testament too to how you never know what's going to happen to blow up on Twitch just because of people playing something, or one super streamer kind of blows up and starts a wave for a lot of other streamers to jump on. I think like Among Us even is kind of a good comparison, because that game was 2 years old, made by three people, and suddenly it just blew up kind of for no reason for a couple people streaming it. So same thing happened with chess. That game is much older, obviously, than Among Us, but for some reason this year, I think with some really big streamers coming in, we had, I think TSM signed a chess player. I don't know if you saw that, Hikaru. So that was super cool, and it's kind of like recognition for that type of thing. And I think it is cool to see more traditional games find their way onto Twitch. Like maybe we'll see checkers or something, or other, I know board games are on Twitch, but it'd be cool to see more of the break into the IRL games, not just straight gaming. Maybe we'll see more of that in the future. Even like the Pokemon card stuff, I think that similar effect right there. It's cool to see that happen, and it's, you know, we never know what'll happen next year with other games like that too.
Yeah, when you mention Among Us, I think that's definitely something that we should touch on, because that has had just such a crazy year and impact. And, you know, it's what they played on AOC's stream, which broke records as the biggest first stream anyone's ever had. And Fall Guys also is another one worth touching on, because that's not an old game, but that is a game really that was, I feel like, designed from the ground up to be streamed and to be incredibly entertaining to watch, because really you're watching people fall, obviously from the name, but kind of fail, because only one person out of 60 wins each lobby. And, you know, we had that Tim the Tap Man like 2 weeks where he hadn't won a single crown, and, you know, ESPN were covering it, and like it was it's so entertaining to watch. I couldn't take my eyes off it because it was so funny watching this guy like not be able to achieve it. And you know, you're wanting to be there for when he eventually achieves it, so you're watching it. So huge year for games like Among Us and Fall Guys, and I think we're probably going to see games start to really be designed from the ground up to be streamable and entertaining to watch, as well as obviously entertaining to play. And I think those two games kind of sum up that experience, and chess maybe can join them as well.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably see more of this happen next year too, like you said, with both indie games as well as older games that kind of blow up out of nowhere. I think the things that both Fall Guys and Among Us did really well is they are both very accessible, so it's very easy to understand the concept of the game, very easy to play with a lot of people, and fun to watch on stream because of the interactions and just the hilarity. I think Among Us survived longer than Fall Guys did, just because of the interactions between streamers, and it's also on mobile, which I think is huge, and I think we'll see more of a trend. There's been a lot of games this year that have broken out in the mobile category. We even have like League of Legends coming to mobile now. A lot of shooters are on mobile, so I think that'll impact the viewer base a lot of games in the future. If people can just download that on their phone and start playing whatever their favorite streamer's playing right away, that's going to be huge, especially for overseas markets too. So we'll see what kind of happens next year, and I hope that we have some more fun indie games break out like that.
I think we're probably going to see more links between viewers' interaction and the streamer. So like when you were talking about mobile phones and like it being really easy to download the game and like play along or something like that, I think we're definitely going to see that. You know, similar to how Jackbox have it, where the audience can vote on who wins like certain games. I think we're going to see more games where the viewers get some kind of decision making based on, you know, how the streamer plays it or what the outcome of each round is. This kind of links to that, I guess. The other big game from my point of view anyway was Riot's other game, not League of Legends, but Valorant's launch this year was incredibly successful, and they tied into Twitch's drop system. So they basically had a closed alpha with a lot of very popular streamers, where they had a weekend where the streamers could play, but they couldn't stream. They could just record the gameplay. And then I think 1 or 2 weeks later, the NDA released, and they could all stream that gameplay that was recorded 2 weeks ago. So a lot of hype was drummed up from this. And then a couple of days later, the open beta launched and all the streamers had access to it. But by watching these streamers on Twitch, you could earn the chance of getting a key. The game's free, so you get a key and then you could start playing. And it was wildly popular to the point where people were farming views by running 24-hour streams of replayed VODs so that they could, you know, get more views because drops were enabled on any account that was streaming effectively at some point. So this was really interesting. We obviously hadn't restarted the podcast by this, but this is the kind of thing that I would love to have talked to you, you know, more about, because it was incredibly successful, so much so that it kind of became a question as to, in the future, how do we do this without rewarding streamers from streaming VODs for 24 hours a day?
Yeah, this was, I think, a masterclass overall in marketing. And there was a lot of, there was some blowback on people not being able to get keys and waiting for that. But I think overall, it was super successful for Riot to be able to market this new game. And I like the way that you said they had the VODs come out initially, where there was this embargo period, and then everyone put out their initial impressions. And then there was a stream date, and only certain streamers had the keys, so you had to watch there. I just think it was super cool to be, it seemed like I'd never seen such a huge, like, instant burst in attention on a game since Valorant. And I know we had even, like, Fall Guys and Among Us were very popular, continue to be, but that seemed like the best way to sort of force a game to be popular. And I think it has caused changes in the drop system, like we already talked about with VOD streaming. That's pretty frowned upon now, because a lot of streamers would just keep themselves on 24/7 and play old broadcasts, and people could farm keys, which wasn't the best for the directory. But overall, I think it was a really successful way to market the game. And I we've seen a lot more drops since then too, in, I think, Tarkov and a couple other games did this as well, just because Valorant is really the success case for how good drops can be. So I hope we continue to see more games try the drops model or more interactive stuff like that. And yeah, I love the way they did the game, and I'm glad to see it's still doing pretty well right now. I don't know if you've seen that as well, but it seems like a lot of people are moving over from CSGO to Valorant or from Overwatch, and I'm sure it'll be a big game of 2021 as well.
Yeah, particularly in NA, I know that a lot of the CSGO pros have come across to Valorant. And I think from a esports perspective, probably why wouldn't you, when you've seen how well Riot has treated the League of Legends scene, you know, with the global competition once a year, Worlds tournament, you know that they're probably going to take that same thing into Valorant. So yeah, really successful game launch, like we said. And it's nice to see developers of games, again, thinking about Twitch, even when it comes to launching their game and, you know, integrating those two so tightly. One second off Twitch, because we do have to remember, probably the biggest, I would say, the largest effect on streamers this year was probably the news of Mixer shutting down, which I think some people predicted, and some people saw that, particularly the moves for Shroud and Ninja that they made a year prior to shutting down, was probably a bit of a flash in the pan, wasn't really bringing enough viewers across or streamers across to the platform. But yeah, that was pretty sad day when Mixer shut down.
Yeah, this is another thing that feels like it was forever ago at this point, just because there's been so much news in 2020. But I agree, this is probably the biggest impact on streaming overall. It's funny because I've seen a lot of people say that if Mixer had still been here right now in the midst of DMCA apocalypse, they might actually have a shot at really pulling away from Twitch. I don't know that I agree with that per se, but yeah, it's definitely different. I think you're right when you said people kind of predicted this would happen, but it's still weird to see it actually come out. And when the news came out, it was almost hard to believe at first. Like, is this real? Is it actually going away? And it's crazy how quickly it happened too. I mean, they had, what, 30, 60 days and it was just gone. And people could move to Facebook. Some people did that. I think it seemed like most people moved to Twitch or YouTube, but obviously made a huge impact on the streamer community, especially for those who were Mixer partners or who had been on there for a long time, having to move their entire community. I don't know a whole lot of personal Mixer friends that had to do this. Did you know anyone who went through that?
There were certainly some people in the community, like I saw in the Gaming Careers Discord, that were asking questions, you know, to some of the more experienced members about, should I go to Twitch? You know, it's so hard to grow on Twitch. Should I go to Facebook? Because, like, you know, there was like some handover that Mixer had to Facebook. I think if you were a partner on Mixer, you automatically got it on Facebook. But now, yeah, it's really just a three-horse race in terms of Twitch, Facebook Gaming, and YouTube, which are all owned by the biggest giants of the world of Google, Amazon, and Facebook, obviously. So it's exciting. We mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks ago that YouTube had finally started supporting OBS Studio financially. So all three platforms are really heavily invested in live streaming and the like grassroots scene that we've seen and growing that. But yeah, it was a sad day for sure with Mixer shutting down. And obviously that then meant that Shroud and Ninja, who had both signed, I think, 3-year exclusive contracts to Mixer, were able to break their contract after a year because Mixer didn't exist anymore, come back to Twitch. And certainly for Shroud, I think he hit 500,000 concurrent viewers on his return to Twitch. He definitely took his time with it. I don't think it was like the next day after the Mixer announcement. I think he like sort of drummed up a lot of hype and did it over 30 days or something. But in terms of streamers moving and leaving platforms, we still have this weird one with Dr. Disrespect being banned on Twitch. You know, I know it's kind of a meme now of the breadcrumbs of evidence as to why it has come about, but I never thought that we still really wouldn't know the reason, what, 6+ months after it happened?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like people have kind of forgotten about it, sort of, for the most part, but this was definitely the biggest mystery of the year, was why was Doc banned? And now you can't even say his name on Twitch or anything, or you get in trouble, and there's all that kind of controversy too. I'm surprised too that we don't know. Maybe it'll come out. It sounds like it was a very secretive thing, and there was probably some NDA involved as to why people can't say what happened. So we'll see if maybe it comes out next year. But to his credit, I mean, Doc is doing really well on YouTube. If you've been following him at all, he also hit above 500K, I think, on his first show on YouTube. There was a ton of hype. He did I think he did a 24-hour tease for his 24-hour tease or something on YouTube. So he really hyped it up. But I think he's doing super well overall. The red goes with his brand very well. And he's just one of another huge YouTube streamer this year who's kind of broken out, along with, you know, Valkyrie, Courage, a lot of streamers kind of showing how big YouTube can get. We talked last week about how YouTube is kind of split evenly now with Twitch on the biggest streams, at least for a week-by-week basis. So I say more power to Doc, and I hope that he continues to do well on YouTube and crush it in 2021.
Yeah, I think in terms of predictions for 2021, not something that I prepped for you or asked you to prep for either, but we're probably going to see that whole YouTube versus Twitch argument just increase and more streamers going across. Because like you say, there is a big use case of streamers now that have left Twitch and had big success on YouTube. And, you know, there's not as much worry now that it will affect your regular uploads or anything like that. Like, they are kind of pushing it. And I think that was one of the things with Mixer, from my point of view, is it suffers from the same problem that Twitch has, but Twitch was much bigger. And that is, how does Amazon get users to Twitch? You know, you can't just get people to type in a random URL if they're browsing Amazon. Like, there has to be some kind of link. And we've said many times on this that YouTube has the perfect way of doing that. They already have billions of people, well, billions of views every single day logging onto YouTube. And all they need to do is start pushing people to live streams. And it's so easy for them. But Mixer, certainly, even though it was owned by Microsoft, there wasn't really a really natural link other than through the Xbox consoles. So I always thought that Mixer was going to have the same like ceiling that it could reach, similar to Twitch, but it was a smaller version of Twitch.
Yeah, predictions for 2021. I mean, I really hope that YouTube steps up. I mean, they already have been this year, to be fair, to give them credit. But I still think there's a lot more they could do with YouTube in the next year. That would be pretty low effort overall to make a really big impact, especially with redesigning some of the chat experience and just the live stream view in general to kind of be up to par with Twitch. And they'd have to think through how it fits into the YouTube ecosystem for sure. But in general, I think the platform YouTube has built is really good. Like you said, the user base is by far the biggest. So I think that's the biggest challenge, because that's one that Twitch still hasn't been able to solve. Mixer couldn't solve it. I don't know about Facebook, to be honest. I still need more research there. But in either case, I think YouTube is really kind of set up to take the crown if they want to. I don't know if they can do it next year from Twitch, just for sheer number of people watching Twitch versus YouTube at a time. But I don't know. I still feel like whenever they want to flip the switch and really take streaming seriously, they could easily blow Twitch out of the water.
Yeah, in terms of big streamers, we did see earlier this year, I think quite near to the beginning of the year, that PewDiePie signed to exclusively live stream on YouTube. He's kind of a weird one because he's like the biggest solo YouTuber, but you don't really hear about him that much in the live streaming space, even though he does live stream on YouTube. So I don't know if he's like pulling the same amount of weight in terms of what contract he can get for exclusivity, like Ninja and Shroud. And Dr. Disrespect didn't really have a choice, did he? He got kicked off Twitch, but we don't know why. But yeah, certainly interesting that I think YouTube really does have a handful of big creators now, and whether they keep trying to poach creators from Twitch and bring them across, or if they just try and grow the people that are starting from live streaming on YouTube, I think we touched on that in last week's podcast as well. But I think that's it for all the streamers that exclusively signed somewhere this year.
Yeah, I think for the most part, there were a lot, like you said, and obviously the Shroud and Ninja moves are pretty big. Logic also got picked up by Twitch, which was kind of big because it was the first musician sort of that had been signed, to my understanding, by Twitch. So maybe we'll see more of that in the future. That was definitely a big move. Obviously, the other big thing this year was DMCA. We talked, it was mostly towards the tail end of the year, but that really blew up over the last couple of months, and we covered it pretty extensively. But is there anything that you want to mention just kind of in review, looking back now? We've had a couple of months to digest DMCA.
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I think when this first started to come out, which was probably the first half of the year, I made a video because I was like, this is going to be a hot topic, and people want solutions. Again, I dipped into the Game Careers Discord server, saw people asking questions, and I thought, let's form these into a video. You know, where can we send people to get copyright-free music? And I answered, I feel like, all the questions that keep coming up in that video. So I just wish I could keep sending that video out as a new video to people. But obviously, I don't want to recreate old content when it's still of purpose. But it's the same thing. There's just too many... There was too many big streamers saying not great things, and that leads to a whole like mentality of, oh, it doesn't matter for me, I'm a smaller creator, or oh, it doesn't matter me, I'm not playing music from the top 50, or oh, it doesn't matter for me, I'm playing Guitar Hero, and they must have licenses for all those kind of things. Like, there was too much misinformation, and it kind of just kept coming up and up again, whereas really people just followed the advice, like, straight away make sure you have licenses to play any music that you're playing on stream, or use music that hasn't got a specific license, you know. And I think I linked to like 7 different resources in that video, so it's gonna go on. It's kind of boring to keep talking about, but we have to keep talking about it. So yeah, if you're just new to listen to this podcast and you're like, oh, I'd love to hear more about DMCA, I think if you listen to like the last 6 episodes that we've done together, we've probably covered it from every single angle perceivable.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, just reviewing really quickly and just looking at Twitch, especially over the last month or so since this has been out for a while, I have seen people stop using music for... Most people stop using music and use copyright-free stuff, but I'm still surprised by a lot of top streamers are using like copyright music that is definitely not cleared to use, like top 50 artists on their stuff. And they're either playing it really quietly or even just saying, who cares? Like, I don't care what happens. I'm just going to, you know, risk it. So I'm kind of surprised by that. I guess maybe because we just talk about it so much, I'm so exposed to how risky it is and like how much they're cracking down on it. But it seems like people, there's still a lot of misinformation going out, like you said, around what you can really use, or maybe people just even don't care enough to really make the swap.
Maybe there's some like rebellious act there as well. You've got to remember, a lot of top streamers are a lot younger than we are now, and maybe there's just, you know, it's not, you know, no one's actually gone to prison for it, no one's really been banned from Twitch for it, so I'm going to keep doing that until somebody is made an example of. And, you know, all we can do is keep repeating ourselves and hope that the people that listen to our advice on the podcast or on our YouTube channels do follow it, and then they won't get burnt by what is effectively, you know, illegal, and, you know, could lose your account. But yeah, DMCA, we're going to keep talking about it through 2021. I honestly don't know if there'll be a single podcast where we don't say those 4 letters, but we should try at some point. It should be like a punishment that one of us has to do a shot of horrible alcohol if we say the 4 letters together.
That's right. We have to donate 10,000 subs if TMCA is said on our podcast or something.
Other things that came out this year, I guess towards the end of the year, definitely the consoles was a big one. We've said before that neither of us are massive console heads. We're both PC gamers, but certainly December has been kind of dominated by PS5 and Xbox releases. And like we said in a couple of podcasts ago, people have really struggled to get their hands on them, which ties really nicely into the Nvidia cards as well, because that was a huge release. I think probably September time. I should really have checked all these dates, but Nvidia's new GPUs that, you know, kind of the graphs that they put up showed how great the value was for them. And people were like, why would you ever buy a 20 series GPU when you can buy a 30 series now? But then again, people haven't been able to buy them. So it's just one of those things, really, isn't it, where these great new hardware come out, and I don't know how much of the shortage is affected by COVID, because that might be completely out of their control, or how much is just marketing. You know, if you if you sell a product that is sold out and hard to get, then it's obviously a commodity that people want to talk about, and I nearly had one, or I'm getting mine today type thing. So yeah, who knows if it's marketing or if it's just a lack of hardware because of something COVID related. But big consoles, big graphics card releases, even big CPUs, but people care less about that. And yeah, I've managed to sneak a 3080 from Nvidia because I made a video for them. So don't hate me. I know there's a lot of hate to content creators for getting equipment when it's hard to get your hands on it, but I haven't taken a console off the shelves, I promise you that much.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of whether you're PC gaming or a console enthusiast, you can't get your new stuff. I think we talked about that last week too. It's kind of interesting though this year, because although we have the new PS5 and the Xbox, I feel like there hasn't really been a huge shift to those yet. At least maybe I'm just not a console gamer anymore, but it feels like there's not a huge release on one of those platforms that you have to get one for. Like, we had the Spider-Man game on PS5, but it was kind of, I didn't see people like going out to buy an Xbox just for that game. All right, sorry, PS5. Versus like if the new Halo had come out or something, or some other big game where people had to get this console to play this big new game. So maybe we'll see that next year. Even like, actually, Halo got delayed till a year from now. So I kind of wonder when the big movement will be towards one of these new consoles, and you have to get one to play some big title that everyone's playing. Same thing with the RTX. I mean, obviously, like Cyberpunk, it's nice to be able to play that with a 3080 or something, but it feels like you don't really need a 3K card to play a lot of the big games right now. Like, obviously, if you're playing Among Us or Fall Guys, you're probably fine on your laptop. So I'm curious to see if we do have some big game come out and people need to have this stuff. But for now, it seems like it's been pretty much a luxury to have one of these new systems.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because, like you say, it's not a necessity, but they've still managed to sell out. So they must be selling incredibly well. I think for anybody building a new PC, it makes sense to wait until you can get a 30 series card, because they're just so much better value than the 20 series or anything else that you can get. But yeah, I need to get more into the console side of things, because like we said, I think before the release, we would have loved if there was some exclusives for streaming. You know, if there was some new app in the PS5 or new hardware in the Xbox that meant that you could do something that didn't require a PC and a capture card if you wanted to stream console games. But yeah, we need to also write a list of things that we should be researching more. Facebook gaming is definitely one of them. Console gaming, we'll add that to the list as well. But kind of when you were talking there about Halo being delayed, we also have Cyberpunk, which we've covered in the last couple of weeks, but maybe that should have been delayed another year by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good thing to talk about while we kind of cap off this year. It was Cyberpunk. It feels like the biggest thing of the last month or two. And yeah, we talked last week, like you said, about it being refunded on the PlayStation Store, and people could do that, I think, on Xbox now as well. There have been a lot of outcry about the game in general. I still personally have liked the game overall, but it definitely was not what people had hoped it would be. To be fair, I don't think it could have ever delivered on the hype level of 8 years of development had built for them, but still was kind of sad to see. And I think, speaking of consoles, that was probably the biggest loss, is if you did have one of the older consoles, either just an Xbox One or a PS4, it seemed like this was really not built to run on those consoles at all. That was maybe the one game where you really want a new console to kind of handle it well. So that was not a great experience for people who, mainly, you can't even get these new consoles. So you really can't experience the game if you're a console player until you get that new console. I don't know. So while it wasn't the best launch, I still think I personally enjoyed it, and I don't think it'll be remembered super well, unfortunately, just because of all this controversy. But we'll have to see if maybe they keep patching it the next year and it kind of redeems itself like No Man's Sky or something else.
Yeah, I think it's obviously one of those lessons learned, isn't it? And I think we mentioned on last week's pod that from a developer's point of view, they probably didn't want it to go out, but it was the publishers or the marketers that were forcing it to go out. So yeah, well, maybe we're going to look forward to a properly released Cyberpunk next year, as well as many other games that have been designed from the ground up to be Twitch or streaming favorable. The only other like major news, until we get into like the hardware software stuff that we want to cover, is that Gaming Careers joined Nerd or Die. I talked about this on my Twitter and Instagram a little bit, but never really made a formal video because I didn't think enough people cared. But It's nice to be able to free up me from some of my resources. I now get to hand off editing videos and making thumbnails and things like that were super time consuming. And I'm probably not the right person to be doing those things anyway, because there's definitely people, certainly a nerd or die, that can do that kind of stuff much better than me. But it led to the reboot of this podcast, which obviously has been great for me. Like, I've really enjoyed having somebody to regularly sit down with and talk about this kind of stuff every week, and make sure that you're awake at like 6:45 or whatever time it is over there in the States when we record these podcasts. But yeah, that's really, I think, going to tie up most of the major news. Do you want to move on to the hardware? We kind of touched on the Elgato Wave microphones, but there's a few other things that were released this year.
Yeah, I think some of the big things that released this year, just kind of going through. So we had the Logitech Stream Cam, which came out. I didn't personally try this, but I know there was some excitement about that. And I didn't see, like, I don't know, I can't see the cameras people are using as easily on streams, obviously, but I don't think I've seen a whole lot of hype around this. Have you?
Yeah, it's a weird one. Again, I made some videos on this because I was lucky enough to be sent one, and it just falls in that weird bracket. We keep saying that we've talked about this before, but we have talked about this before, where webcams to cameras is like a really weird middle ground, where, like, do you really want to be spending like $200+ on a webcam when, if you just saved for a little bit longer, you could buy an entry level proper camera with a capture card or a cam link or something like that? And the Logitech Stream Cam kind of felt in that realm, where it certainly is an upgrade over the C920, but you could get the C920 for like $25 on Prime Day. I remember, like, every single year you could get a very good webcam for $25. And are you asking people to save up, you know, six times that to buy the Stream Cam when it's not that big of an upgrade? It still is probably my favorite webcam. And I know AVMedia released a webcam as well this year, PW513 from memory. I didn't get to test that. I'm not on AVMedia's list for sending things out, but I think it probably falls from the same kind of flaws, where expensive webcam versus cheap DSLR. Like, if you can get your hands on a secondhand A5100 from Sony, it's the best small factor camera that's capable of running from battery power, running from continuous power, sorry, and being captured by something like the Cam Link. So again, probably going to cover that in a video, I think, next year when we again look at cameras. But like you said, it's harder to see the streamers what cameras they're using. You can basically have a good guess as to if it's a proper camera or a webcam quite easily, but to actually know the model, you're kind of relying on them putting it in the description in an affiliate link or something like that.
Yeah, so while we saw those cameras come out this year, I don't feel like they made a huge impact. It seems people are still opting mostly for like the Sony A5100 or those entry-level DSLRs for the most part. But audio-wise, we had a couple different things come out. So we had, like you said earlier, the Elgato Wave 1 and Wave 3, which I think I have seen more of those pop up around Twitch lately. People are using those a bit more because they do kind of bridge the gap between not only having the XLR and the USB interface, so it's a better kind of long-term investment, but also having the software, which is really big on the Elgato, so you don't have to have a GoXLR or other type of interface to do the mixing. This one I think has been pretty popular. I know you even used it last week on the podcast. What do you think about that kind of reviewing this year?
Yeah, I didn't give it a fair run last week. I was in probably the most unacoustically treated room you could imagine. Like, if you could design an echo chamber, it was that. So yeah, and I didn't have a boom arm or anything, so I didn't give it a fair run. I definitely did cover it in my video, and I compared it to some other like popular USB microphones. Because the Wave 1, Wave 3, they're good USB microphones. Probably my favorite recommendation right now for a streamer looking for a USB microphone. But a lot of the value of that comes in the software, where they've effectively built like a GoXLR type app that runs on your PC and allows you to have control over your stream audio and your personal audio and easily mute things with your Stream Deck and all those kind of things. So Wave 1 and Wave 3, I think right now for me, are my favorite USB microphones. The Shure MV7, haven't been able to test, but like you said, has that, the benefit to that is that you have the USB and the XLR. So you can't really go wrong purchasing that right now, because even if you're going to use it as a USB mic and you then want to get into more professional audio and have an XLR and through an interface, you don't have to change the microphone for that. When we were talking about the Logitech StreamCam and the AVMedia PW513, technically not a hardware release, but an interesting thing that did come out this year is Elgato's Epoch Cam. And I'm still not sure how you say that word, if it's Epoch Cam, Epoch Cam. I'm not sure. Epic Cam, yeah, possibly. I need to hear like somebody from Elgato say it out, Steggy, say it out loud, and then I'll know exactly how it's meant to be pronounced. Technically, not hardware, because you're using the existing hardware of your phone, but a pretty interesting solution to the whole camera problem. Because I think I would always had in my mind that Elgato would probably release a camera at some point, but maybe they're not going to, and they're just going to keep improving this software that allows you to use your phone camera wirelessly or wired and use it in your live streams.
Yeah, I think this is one of the bigger releases of the year that kind of has still flown under the radar, at least in my opinion. Again, I can't tell what people are using for the cameras, so maybe they're using it more than I think, but it seems like such a great option because anything you can do to make it really accessible for new people to start streaming with what they already have, the better, because then they don't have to go buy something, especially if it's just the software and using your existing phone. And I think, like we talked about, sometimes your phone is better than like the Stream Cam or these other cameras that are out there, because phones are getting pretty good these days. So I definitely think this is one of the biggest releases, and maybe we'll see more things like that, even like audio wise, using your phone for audio or something in the future. I think there's a lot of cool things you could do with that. And I don't know, people keep using that, especially new streamers in the future.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where like some people are using their phones as, because you can get Stream Deck on your phone now, or Touch Portal, or like one of those apps, but you're also wanting to use it now as a webcam. So are you going to buy a second phone so that you can stream with it? Or are they going to build like a camera mount that you can mount it and then also still use it as a Stream Deck when it looks like you keep touching the screen? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but I think, yeah, super interesting app. And again, I think it's really providing a lot of value to streamers, because effectively you're saying, I think on Black Friday it was like $5 for a lifetime license for Epoch Cam, and yeah, obviously provides way better quality than a lot of webcams do. The only annoying bit really is that you have to put your phone into like some kind of mount every time, but knowing Elgato, they'll probably solve that as well. The only other bit of hardware which did cause quite a stir, and again I haven't been able to test it, is the Logitech and Herman Miller crossover office chair, gaming chair. I can't remember how much it went for now. I should have looked it up before. Was it $500 or was it a lot more than that?
$1,500.
$1,500. Right, that's probably why it created such a stir. what are you sat on right now? Because I am on a very comfortable gaming chair, a Noble Chairs one, which is kind of trying to bridge that gap again between gamer chair and really actually quite good for your back. What are you on? Are you on something expensive or IKEA basics? Or
actually, I'm on that chair that you're talking about right now.
Oh, you are on it. This sounds so rehearsed, but I actually genuinely did not know that.
Yeah, it's actually, well, so I can tell you from experience, I love the chair, and I was really excited when it came out, because I've always been a fan of Herman Miller. I've never owned a chair, but I ended up biting the bullet and getting it because I've been working from home for 6 months and at my computer like 16 hours a day. So I got it, and I love it because it's so customizable. It's held up really well for the 6 months I've had it or so. And I think we'll probably see more of this happen in the future. Herman Miller has actually released a couple more of these in some of their other chair models. I know those didn't get quite as much attention, but there are other variants like the Aeron and even like their cheaper chairs they've done gaming versions of, which I'll be honest, are not that different than the real version. Like this chair, the only difference is it has the Logitech logo on it, a blue color, and slightly different finish to the actual chair itself, like back here. So while I don't think it's a huge difference, I do think, personally, I think it's cool to see these office chairs kind of break into gaming, because I feel like they're better supported for you than the traditional gamer chair, which can just be, from experience, a very flat back and really bad for your posture. So, and I've seen these pop up a lot on Twitch. Have you seen that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can definitely not say that that's a theory. I think that's pretty much proven at this point that the cheap gaming chairs are absolute trash. They're going to ruin your body, and you'd be better off spending $100 at IKEA and buying an office chair there than some of these gaming chairs that cost three times the price. So yeah, you really want to be going with a brand that you know has some research in actual ergonomics and is going to support you properly. Again, kind of similar to you, I'd heard such good things about Herman Miller, and honestly, I'd looked quite often at like trying to get a secondhand one even because of how hefty the prices are. But it seemed like the perfect launch for them, because they wanted to target this new audience, and Logitech probably didn't have to do anything. They literally just said, this is our color code for blue. Add that to the chair a few times and we'll help you sell it. And it sold pretty well. So I think you're right. We're going to see more crossover between like professional equipment and gamers. But there's not really much difference between somebody that sat at their computer for an office job and somebody that sat at their computer to play games and live stream. So there's not really many gaming features, like you said. And do you even want gaming features on your chair? I don't want RGB on my chair. So I'd just happily take a professional chair that's going to suit me and keep my back straight in some way.
Yeah, I mean, those do exist, to be fair. The RGB chairs, they're out there if you're really feeling crazy. But in general, I'm curious to see, because like you said, this one sold really well. I think it was backward for a long time and it was very hard to get a hold of. I'm curious to see if we have more breakouts like that in 2021 with different types of more traditional things or just different brands breaking into the gamer space. Like Herman Miller obviously did really well. Maybe we have other types of things for working at home with like desks. I know Herman Miller does a desk, but it's not really known, but maybe like a more established desk company of some kind, or maybe it's other brands slapping their logo on stuff like Elgato and Corsair and Logitech will keep putting their logo on other things and make those kind of partnerships. So I'm curious to see what we get in 2021, especially with more working from home, probably continuing for at least the first half of the year.
Yeah, in terms of big brands that have come into the streaming space and sort of tried to reinvent things, I think a good one from a software point of view is NVIDIA Broadcast. Came out sort of, in two phases this year. They released RTX Voice as sort of a beta software, the software that's meant to help remove background noise through artificial intelligence. And then they packaged it together in an app called NVIDIA Broadcast, which included some cool webcam stuff as well, where you can make it look like a professional webcam by a professional camera by blurring the background behind you. That was really cool. And definitely something that helped a lot of people during lockdown when they were having Zoom meetings for work and stuff like that. And they could green screen themselves out without needing a green screen, all those cool things. We also saw two major releases of OBS, version 25 and version 26, which saw some cool features like Vulkan Game Capture, the implementation of Better Twitch TV and Franco's Face Twitch chat extension, so you could actually see the emotes in your OBS window, source toolbar, some new noise suppression, virtual camera. They feel a little bit old for me because I create videos about them when they come out, and every time a new OBS version comes out, it's like super exciting. But it is impressive that they keep cranking out like big new features every 4 or 5 months. So hats off to the OBS team. And then the only other thing I think in software that I noted down, obviously Streamlabs had a lot of software updates, but they kind of just mirror what OBS does, was Elgato added multi-recording functionality to a lot of their capture cards, which is effectively just really built for people that want to have a recorded raw version of their gameplay and then also send that gameplay with all their alerts and webcam to a streaming site, so that you could use the Elgato capture cards in two different apps, one to record and one to stream, or whichever combo you'd want to do. That was a cool little update, but I think that's probably it from software point of view until we get into the Twitch updates, which we've kind of put into their own section.
Yeah, there's quite a few Twitch updates to go through. We had a lot of small changes that came out right after the town hall that went out, or sorry, the GlitchCon that went out earlier this year. As well as some things early in the year, you said earlier about how esports and music have their own directories now on Twitch, and how music especially got a lot of attention this year with lockdown and everything. There are some channel page updates. We have the channel trailers, schedules, and social media profiles now. So those are all small updates to the profiles. I talked a little bit at least about how I think there's still some work to do there on the profile, because there was the whole redesign of the page, but it kind of made things harder to find. So overall, like my lasting impression of that is I still think it could be better, but at least they are adding new features for you to take advantage of on there. Did you have any thoughts on those two things?
Yeah, I think the new channel pages, I agree with you. They still kind of feel like they're in a beta format where like schedule is still too hard to find. You shouldn't have to find it. It should be what appears, I think, when you're not live and somebody goes to your Twitch page, you should be able to see when they're next going live in some kind of countdown or their schedule or something like that. Yeah, it's cool that they've added, like, I definitely prefer the channel page to how it used to be. And the fact that you can now search people's social media profiles and that you can link those kind of things, it definitely looks a lot more professional. But I wouldn't be surprised if we keep seeing new updates to channel pages, you know, over the next year or ongoing, really. A couple of new updates in terms of safety. They announced their advisory council. There was obviously a lot of news around that.
Which, by the way, someone pointed out to me recently, have you heard anything about this? Because it feels like this kind of got announced and went off the radar completely. I don't know, because there was a lot of controversy, like you said, initially, but I have not seen anything from this council in since it launched, really.
Yeah, I mean, I know that people like CoCarnage gets tagged whenever there's like some Twitch drama now, because I think he's probably the most famous person that's on the council. You don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. I imagine they're helping, you know, with a lot of these issues and trying to make sure that the tweets that get sent out and the decisions that get made are right. But yeah, they've certainly taken a bit of a backseat, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see if they do more, but it could be behind the scenes, like you said. Maybe they're just not in the public light helping, but it sure seems like we haven't seen a whole lot of public influence from what they've been working on. So we'll have to see next year as well. A couple more updates with ModView coming out. There's a lot more features now in ModView you can take advantage of, which is pretty cool to see. We did see Twitch kind of support viewers and mods more this year, which I think was pretty cool with ModView, as well as a lot of new ways to use channel points and predictions and things like that. So I'm glad to see Twitch give more agency to mods and viewers and not just streamer features all the time, because that's something that in the past has been kind of lacking, I would say, on Twitch's part. Yeah. So
yeah, definitely. Like, I think some of the features, I don't know if Hype Train came out this year. I feel like it probably did come out this year. I probably didn't release an email about it, which is why I haven't written it down. But like, some features have definitely done better than others. Like Hype Train, whenever I see Hype Train, the Twitch chat just fills with scam train. So like, they have memed themselves there. But yeah, definitely like the community challenges, the viewers being able to vote on certain outcomes now. Mods like have so much more control, being able to see chat history and being able to, you know, see certain messages that people have typed. Like, it's a way better experience now for a viewer and a moderator on Twitch, which is, you know, that's what you want to see. We want to be talking them up when they do good things, and that's definitely like a better experience than it was a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So hopefully we'll see more of that coming out soon. And I think that is one of the things that YouTube doesn't have on Twitch just yet, is more interactive features like that. So maybe Twitch can keep working on that and kind of extend their lead a little bit in next year. We also had some small changes. Twitch Prime is now Prime Gaming, just to make it more, make it more uniform on Amazon's side. Twitch Versus started up their series with lots of tournament hosting. Lots of Twitch esports stuff in general this year, with Twitch Rivals as well.
I haven't actually seen much about this though, because the announcement here, if I remember my email correctly, was that they released Twitch Versus as like some beta software where people could sign up and structure a tournament to be hosted on Twitch. So it wouldn't be hosted through Twitch, not hosted, you know, by Twitch, but you host your tournament on Twitch, and it helps with the structuring of the brackets and being able to like switch between different streams and stuff. I don't know if any tournaments are using this, but I haven't really seen much news about it since. I've definitely seen a lot of the Twitch tournaments that they've run, but yeah, this was some software that kind of got announced. I think it got announced as a beta, and I haven't really seen much about it since.
Yeah, I actually kind of forgot what this was, to be honest, as I was going through. So this got announced in September, and this was, you know, like you said, basically communities could kind of host their own tournaments and use the Twitch Rivals sort of system for their events, but it seems like it's still on a wait list from what I'm seeing. I don't know if anyone's even gotten into the program yet. So
my bet is that Twitch Versus team got pulled across to do DMCA stuff. We don't need that tournament hosting stuff. Help people delete FODs en masse. Make them enlisted. That's probably what's actually happened, to be fair.
Guarantee you that's probably what happened too. Speaking of other features that came out, one of the bigger ones, I would say, was Soundtrack that came out this year. Although I don't think... And there was a lot of kind of initial excitement because it came out right after DMCA, and it was kind of positioned as this golden bullet to stop DMCA, is just use Twitch Soundtrack. But I, in practice, I've not seen a lot of people use Twitch Soundtrack, but B, it seems like there are still issues with Twitch Soundtrack in terms of licensing. Have you seen that as well?
That's the nightmare scenario, isn't it? When you're trying to push new software to people that's meant to fix things, and people aren't sure whether or not it's legal to use it. Not the good rumor that you want to be going around. It's definitely something I think that they were working on and then had to rush out, because it feels to me like it's a good system, like it's a good idea. Twitch can probably make quite a lot of money by like working with artists to make licenses that can be used on live streams, but it was rushed out and it doesn't really feel finished. But I hope that they keep working on it, and I hope that they work with a lot of, you know, artists that want their music to be freely available for people to stream with. But yeah, a little bit rushed, but I don't blame the developers behind that, because they probably weren't expecting to release it for another 6 months.
Yeah, that's very kind of like Cyberpunk, right? Just got to go out now. So whatever it's like.
It's been a rough year to be a developer, I feel like, for one of these platforms that needs something out. I think that probably wraps it up. We did have like a couple of features, like you said, from the GlitchCon, you know, boost this streamer type thing, but we don't really know more than we did a couple of weeks ago when we first covered that. So yeah, I think that really is a wrap of the major news from the last year. So a lot did happen, but with the rate that live streaming is growing, I wouldn't be surprised if 2021 sees even more companies getting involved, even more drama in terms of people being banned and signing contracts to new platforms, even more competition between the platforms, which is always a good thing for us, the consumers, the people that are streaming or watching on these platforms. So yeah, a pretty hectic year, but I'm excited for 2021.
Yeah. Is there anything, like, any one big thing you want to see in 2021 come out?
Oh, God, you put me on the spot with that.
Well, I think...
If you've got an answer.
Yeah, I'll start with mine. You can think about it while you answer. I think, I don't know, DMCA, obviously we talked about it a lot. I really hope that there's some improvement there that can really kind of... Because it feels like we're still not sure about a lot of stuff that's cleared for use, and people still getting copyright strike for stuff on servers that are already deleted and that sort of thing. So that would be one of them. I think the other would be, I would love to see YouTube really kind of step up and really compete with Twitch this year. Because again, I think they're really primed to do it. We've talked about, you know, they're hitting these milestones on watch hours and everything and user base and new people coming to the platform. So I think if YouTube really can take people away from Twitch and make a big impact, then that'll be great for everyone, because then Twitch will really start competing even more and YouTube, and it'll just be great for every streamer across the board. So that's my big wish for 2021.
Yeah, I think I agree with you from the YouTube point of view, definitely. It's weird. I've defended the developers so many times here in this conversation, saying you've got to rush this feature out, you've got to go now when it's not ready. But I'm not really sure. Maybe YouTube should just flip that switch, because we've said they need to improve like the chat experience and a lot of the viewer side of things. So do they want to wait until they finish that and then flip the switch where they all of a sudden just start recommending live streams to anybody that's browsing YouTube? You know, as long as they're browsing in the right category. I'm not saying somebody should be, you know, watching a cooking video about how to make a banana cake and then being recommended a Fortnite stream. Like there's no interaction between those two use cases. But if somebody was wanted to learn how to make a banana cake and there was a cooking channel live on YouTube, that makes perfect sense, especially if it was a cooking channel teaching people how to make banana bread or something. So I feel like YouTube, it just needs to flip the switch. When do they do that? Do they want to make sure the platform is like bulletproof and, you know, they really feel like they have feature parity with Twitch, or are they going to do it? I probably do expect that to happen in 2021. It's probably not going to be a flip switch, but certainly a rollout of more and more people being recommended live streams.
Yep, I think we see more of that. And like you said, it doesn't have to be just gaming either. There's so much stuff on YouTube that it can be everything from cooking to beauty to anything else. So I'm really excited to see if they do that. And hopefully it'll kind of tee up this big competition, like you said, and we'll have sort of like that old school Mixer versus Twitch rivalry that was going on and was very, very popular. I want to see more of that with YouTube as like a real contender with Twitch and equally pulling people from the platform. So yeah, I think that does it for this year, though. So anything you want to say before we sign off here?
No, I guess this is the last episode for 2020, but we're not planning on taking a break anytime soon. So next episode coming out following Wednesday. Thanks to everybody that's been watching and listening to the podcast as we've rebooted it, and all the feedback that we've had about new episodes. We have actually crossed 1 hour on this recording, I believe. So that's the first time we've managed to do that. So I'm probably keeping you from your actual job where you get paid to do stuff. But thanks very much for joining us through this year. I hope 2021 is going to be continue get 50 plus episodes out of this podcast, and people really get to learn a lot more about the live streaming industry. So yeah, thanks so much for joining and for coming on to the podcast every single week. And I hope everybody listening and watching has a great start to 2021. It can't be worse than 2020, can it?
That's right. Can't possibly be worse than that. Fingers crossed. Knock on all the wood.
All right. See you in the next one, guys. Peace.